Welcome to Asset Finance Connect's series of podcasts on the European asset finance industry. I'm Richard O'Donoghue, and over the next few months, I'll be chatting with industry experts about the challenges and opportunities facing our industry in 2025 and beyond. All this is possible with the sponsorship of Alpha. We'll tell you a bit more about Alpha later in the podcast. So a few years ago, every conference in our industry would have featured a session on as-a-service models. However, at our recent European Leaders Summit in Amsterdam, every discussion was now about AI. Does this mean that as-a-service has gone away? To discuss this, I'm delighted to be joined by Jan Touton, the CEO and co-founder of Blackwinch. Jan, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning, and thank you to have me on your podcast, Richard.
Fantastic. So before we get into this topic, I'm going to ask you the really obvious question, which is the name Blackwinch. Where does this come from?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Richard. And I believe in people who are, you know, working with passion. And so for me, Blackwinch relates to two of my passions. One is sailing and one is performance. So let's start with the sailing. A winch on a boat is a very magnificent piece of equipment that helps to leverage a lot of forces with little forces. So you can get tons of pressure on the sail just with your arm. And that's what we want with Blackwinch. We are here to help our customers to leverage the maximum of what they can get from their business with the minimum change. And the black is about performance. When you look at performance, any type of performance, there's a lot of people backstage that are black from head to toe and that are here to help the performance to succeed, but they are not visible. And that's also our principle. So in a nutshell, we are here to leverage a lot of forces backstage of our customers.
Great. And you claim, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, but on your website, you say you are the world's exclusive authority in product as a service models. So I guess number one, explain what you do. And number two, explain why you're the world's exclusive authority on these models.
Yes, of course. So what we do with Blackwinch is very simple. We help manufacturers or distributors to turn their business into a subscription-based model. And we are a consulting firm, which is really dedicated to make this transition and to help those companies to be successful and to scale those new business models. So that's really our daily bread, and that's the added value we bring to the market. Why do we claim to be the world's authority? Well, we didn't find any competitor so far. So there are, of course, some players that are close to us or some areas where we overlap. But globally, when it comes to implementing an as-a-service business model for a manufacturer or a distributor, I've never met any competitors yet. So if there are some, please contact me because I would love to have competition. It's stimulating. And that's why we claim to be the world's authority, because we believe we are the only one.
And maybe, you know, this reflects where we started, which is, you know, as a service, if I go back 4 or 5 years ago, every single sort of conference talked about this and there were different names being used. You know, servitization was one that we heard a lot of in our industry. But the fact that there isn't a lot of competition, does this suggest that maybe this hasn't taken off in the way people anticipated?
Yeah, I think you have a say. It's like any hype, you know, it's being top on the agendas for 2-3 years, and then there's a new topic that comes and takes over. But as a service is still very much active, and there are still some very concrete successful examples. But of course, we need to define what is as a service here. As a service servitization, if I'm in a meeting and I have 50 people in the room, I will have 50 definitions of as a service. So, yeah, it's also a very broad topic, and what works today is a very specific area of as a service, of course.
So give me your definition then of as a service.
So, as a service is mainly composed of, I would say, 4 levels of offering product and services to a user. I'll start by the top layer, the most advanced as a service model is a pay-per-use model. So you would have access to an outcome and you pay based on this outcome. And of course, everything is included, so this outcome is maximized. That's the top level. The paper scroll also pay per use. We see it a lot in the healthcare industry, for example, in the pay-per-treatment models. The level below is as a service being a service contract or what we could call also a leasing contract, including some services and with the capacity to opt out in a very easy way. So you're not committed in time, but you pay even if you don't use. And the two levels below are the known one. Level below is leasing or operational lease, as we know, which is benefiting from an equipment at a fixed price per month, including services, but you're committed for a certain amount of time. And the level below is pure financing. So you get a payment plan, and at the end, you become the owner of the equipment. So four levels. For me, they all fall into as a service because it really depends what's the expectation of the end customer. And the higher you go in the type of, I would say, servitization, the higher the servitization, the higher the flexibility, basically.
And maybe talk a little bit about then pay per use, because I think people kind of confuse as a service with pay per use, and you've outlined very clearly the four levels, which is very helpful. Do you see much pay per use in the market? Again, it's something that people have talked about a lot, or they use the term consumption models. But again, has this taken off?
Yeah, so it's again, it's another topic. If we dig in, there are also a lot of definitions around pay-per-use. But let me remain generalist on this one. Pay-per-use means that you are going to pay based on the consumption you have of this equipment. But then, what do you pay for? So, what is the metric that is going to be used to measure this consumption? And what we see rising is a metric that is based on value creation. So you create value together with the end user, and this value is being shared with the provider and the end user. So this model of consumption-based is very often, in fact, based on value created. And of course, there is always a minimum. So a pure 100% flexibility does not exist, but it's also not in the interest of the user to have 100% flexibility. So there is always a minimum usage committed, but there is also the component of deciding on the right KPI to measure the consumption and to share the value that is created by the quality of the service delivered.
And again, can you maybe elaborate a little bit on that? Maybe give us a use case or some example of value being created and how that sharing might work.
Yeah, of course. I give you an example of a company we've helped to put in place this model, and they measure the quality of glass bottles when they exceed the furnace. So when a bottle is being produced,
Wow.
a glass bottle, yeah,
Yeah.
you discover niche markets every day, and very interesting business model and industries. So I've discovered the glass industry. when a bottle is being produced, a glass bottle, it needs to be checked. And I've learned that 25% of the bottles go back to the furnace because there's a lot of waste. And it's still very, I would say, human-based, the decision on the calibration of the furnace according to humidity in the air, the temperature, etc. So a lot of waste. So there are equipments that are specialized in measuring the quality of the bottles when they exceed the furnace. Those equipment were sold per piece, including maintenance, etc. What we have been designing with this customer is a model to pay per bottle. So every time a bottle is checked, there is a fee that is being paid. What we have also worked on is to say if we are able to reduce the amount of waste with a good return on data, good feedback on the data gathered by the checks, we will be able to increase the number of bottles that pass through the test. And therefore, reduce the percentage of waste. And those bottles that go over the 25% of waste have a higher price. So the user is paying more for those bottles because there's a value that's being created and this value is being shared. So that's a very concrete example of a pay-per-use model. Instead of selling this equipment, they are being priced per bottles. And when there is a reduction in waste, so a value created for the user, then the price is higher.
I didn't think when we started this podcast, Jan, we'd be talking about bottle manufacturing and purposes. It's not a topic I'm very familiar with, but you've explained it extremely well. I suspect you didn't expect you'd be learning about this either when you moved into as a service Indeed. Models.
Indeed, yeah.
just again, sort of expanding maybe a little bit on that topic. How does a model like that come about? Where does the impetus behind, you know, we've got a furnace, we've got glass bottles, we have, you know, a lot of them being returned, let's build a pay-per-use model. How does that come about as a conversation?
Yeah. Very good question. What's the ignition point? You know, that's always what I ask, where does this idea come from? In this specific case, it's about data. So it's to have a data-driven relation with the supplier. So it was a clear request from the end user to have a more data-driven relation with the supplier and to really build on the quality of the furnace based on a good feedback loop with the supplier. That's the driver. And for the supplier, the driver is to enter into a recurring revenue model, because the provider is owned by a private equity, and there's an ambition to have better valuation of the company at the day of the exit.
And do you find that a lot of the demand for this, or the ignition point, as you called it, comes from the end user rather than suppliers? Who's driving this market?
Yeah, it's both. In fact, it's both. So you have suppliers that define those offers and are pushing them proactively to the market. And you have customers that say, look, we have a piece of our business that we buy into subscription. Could you also do it for us? You know, there's some cracks, you know, in the way companies transact. They get used to servitization on specific aspect of the business, and suddenly they ask expansion. A lot of companies, for example, use for decades car leasing, which is a model of as a service subscription. Coffee machine, when there was coffee machine, less and less. So all this is already, so you see what is interesting is that some areas of the business are really used to those models and some are coming to it.
And that's an interesting point, because I think often there's kind of an assumption that the entire business shifts to one of these models, whereas it sounds like the way you're describing it, it's portions of the business or specific business lines or specific relationships with a customer that require it, rather than the entire business being transformed.
Exactly. I mean, I'm going to drop a figure here. We are witnessing about 30% as a max of business going through as a service.
Right.
Yeah, that's a kind of a third of the transactional business will move towards subscription. More is quite rare. There are some examples, but it's quite rare. Unless you have an organization that has made the decision to go full as a service or started from scratch, when you see scale-ups today that have started 5 years ago only into subscription, it's 100%.
And which industries, or are there industries that sort of are more inclined to move to this based on your experience? I mean, you mentioned healthcare earlier.
Yeah. Healthcare is moving super fast in this direction. Paper treatment, basically.
Yeah.
Energy transition is going fast there also. Batteries, heat pumps, solar panels, everything that you put in a building to make it more sustainable. The machinery industry, so everything that is linked to production facilities. Logistics, also going very fast. In the price per pallet, everything is being brought to the pallet. And of course, IT, but that's a long time already, IT infrastructure and cloud computing.
Now, a brief word about our sponsors. Alpha Systems is the class-leading SaaS platform for equipment and auto finance. With modules for usage-based billing, the asset lifecycle, and revolving credit facilities, Alpha Systems is built to support as-a-service models. Alpha Systems helps you manage complex portfolios, drive efficiency, and enhance the customer experience. If you're ready to simplify your operations, visit alphasystems.com to learn more. That's alphasystems.com.
What are the main barriers or constraints that companies face in doing this transition? What slows them down, or what's normally the biggest problem that they face?
I will dare to say that's mainly an issue with the vision from the board.
Okay.
Yeah, because it starts with a long-term vision. Because implementing as a service or scaling it is a 3 to 5 years journey.
Right.
Yeah. And there's not a lot of organization I meet that have a 3 to 5 years ambition. Yeah.
Particularly the private equity owned ones. I would imagine that's hard for them.
Yeah. And to have the patience, because this model has the impact on the revenue recognition and the margin recognition is completely different than launching a new service or launching a new product. It is disrupting the recognition of revenue, and you need 3 to 4 years to see the first profitability coming in. So we see a lot of projects that stop because there's no return quick enough, or there is a new management, or there is a huge market shift. You need a strong vision to keep the as a service strategy implementation running across all the elements that can disrupt it.
And do you find that companies start on this journey and then stop? Yeah. Is that a common experience?
Yeah, it is. Unfortunately, it is. Yeah. And not by lack of success or lack of traction, but mainly by lack of or by different decisions in terms of investment.
And is demand a factor, or do you think it's more just... it's the kind of companies just not being committed enough to kind of seeing the journey through?
I think there's a lack of commitment. I'll give you an example that I witness very often. The sales enablement is a very important piece. So when you switch to as a service, you need to make sure that your sales team will be able to offer this new way of transacting. And the first thing I ask very often when I start an assignment is, please provide me with the reward scheme of your salespeople. And we're going to see how important as a service is. And 90% of the cases, there is no incentive or very little incentive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because management of organizations thinks that it's obvious for salespeople that they're going to start selling it instead of transactional approach. It's wrong. It doesn't work. So giving a right incentive to the sales team is key. But again, what I said a few minutes ago, the margin is going to come in 3-4 years from now. So you need to incentivize your sales team and to pay commissions, bonuses based on a future margin. And that's quite a difficult exercise for a lot of companies.
Yeah. And even leave aside the principle behind it, but even just to manage it at an operational level and a tracking level is presumably quite difficult for these companies as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you kind of touched earlier on opt-outs. You talked about pay-per-use, things that financial institutions generally don't like. They're we're more inclined to look at credit. So again, a lot of the listeners to this podcast are going to be in the asset finance industry. How do these deals get financed?
Yeah. So as mentioned, when the paper used, there's always a minimum for the interest of both parties, but also for the interest of the funder.
Yeah. So,
and this minimum guarantees a minimum, I would say, income. That will very often be linked to a large amount of the equipment involved. So at the end, it's about the same as a leasing contract with 10-20% residual value. And here you will have, let's say, 80% of the equipment being paid by the fixed part. And there's a, of course, the variable part is also mainly made of services. So when the end user sees the variable part and we say there's a minimum, this minimum, of course, and when you attach this minimum only to the hardware, it makes that you can finance a big piece of the hardware. So that's the way.
So traditional funders can play in this space
because 100%.
They kind of would view it as an operating lease, for want of a better term, or a residual based lease.
Exactly. And for the opt-out, it's a construction with the manufacturer that takes the commitment to replace the equipment to a second user, or to pay for the early termination. So there's a co-agreement between the funder and the manufacturer to organize this rotation of equipment.
So it sounds like there's a lot of partnerships, a lot of collaboration required to structure these deals. Is that correct? My assessment correct that is where the industry plays or is going, that partnerships are important?
Yeah, it is because, again, as usual, when you talk about funding models, it's all about trust and experience and track record. And this is what we explain to our customers also. You need to have a strong existing relation with a funding partner to go in this direction. So you need to be already doing some leasing or some leasing. You have a leasing program in place to make this move because there's already an existing connection and relation. I'm convinced that, in fact, as a service is the next move of the leasing industry.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So we haven't missed out on the opportunity. It's still to come.
Correct. Yeah.
And I know, just talking of partnerships, you recently, I saw on LinkedIn that you've founded a partnership with Bearing Point. How is that going to work, or what sort of role do they play in this whole ecosystem?
Yeah. We at Blackwinch, we believe so in partnerships also. And of course, partnerships start with good relation and human connection. So I personally had some connections with some partners of Bearing Point, and in our discussions, it came obvious to us that our customer base can benefit from the capacity of Bearing Point to organize change and to help companies to navigate change that is quite impactful when it comes to as a service, where Blackwinch is very skilled to manage the operations, the implementation phase. So where it's obvious for Bearing Point and Blackwinch is to approach organization to say, we're going to help you and to manage the change and to implement it and to scale. Where Blackwinch alone, change management is not a skill we have. And Bearing Point alone, implementation of as a service is not a skill they have. So for us, it was obvious to join forces, and it's an obvious match. And it's based on common customer. Right? We didn't invent it. We had already common customers, and we said, okay, let's structure it to approach more customers together.
You know, it's interesting. We've had a number of podcasts now around AI, and one of them was with Allegra Pizzarisi, and she was saying that your AI transformation will never be successful without people. And I think you're kind of saying the same thing. You know, it's, you've got the operational capability, but Bearing Point brings you that change management that involves people.
Exactly. It remains a people show. Yeah.
which is very encouraging for people, as opposed to a agentic AI show, which maybe remove some of the people. Yeah. Let's finish by, you know, you alluded to it. You said, I'm convinced this is the future for the leasing industry, that we haven't missed the boat. So maybe discuss, where do you see this industry going over the next 5 years, and what's the market going to look like? And maybe what are the opportunities for asset finance players or alternative asset managers to get involved in this space?
Yeah. I'm convinced, and it's not only me, but by reading studies also, that the scarcity of raw materials is rising. And if it's not scarcity, at least it's the cost of the raw materials. Look at copper. Copper is 20 times more expensive than 10 years ago. If I am a manufacturer of air cooling units, which are full of copper, I have a huge interest of remaining the owner, not of the cooling units, but of the raw materials that are in there. So the future of this industry is about understanding the stock of raw materials that are under those contracts, and how can we tap into those raw materials to be able to make a new production. So it's a co-creation between manufacturers and funders, manufacturers for the eco-design of their equipment and the fact that they know that the equipment will come back to them, and so they can use it for a second, a third, a fourth user, and then use the raw materials in it. And the funders have to develop capacities not to do only asset management, but also raw materials management. And so you would know as a funder that you have X millions of tons of copper in your contract that you can make available for a new production process. So to me, the industry is going in this direction because of the increase of the price of the raw materials, and we won't be able to source them from the ground, but we'll source them from the equipment that are being used.
And is that message getting out into the industry? Do people understand, in your opinion, that that's the way the market is moving and that's what's going to drive as a service models?
It's, for a producer, for a manufacturer, if this message is associated with loyal customers, recurring revenue, higher margin, competition avoidance, of course, this has a strong here. For the funders, it's about the greenification of their model and green funding as much as possible, recyclable assets in their portfolio. So I think it hits both sides, I would say, KPIs. Is it already live? No, because again, it takes time to change those models. But we see more and more manufacturers that are now offering already refurbished equipment into leasing subscription. So that's the start.
Yeah, and I mean, we had Carmen Aina from BNP Paribas 3CIT talking about that whole circular economy and its importance. And it sounds like as a service is directly linked into that as well, or potentially linked into it going forward, and the messages will be somewhat similar.
100%. I completely align with the vision of Carmen on this matter. We had a lot of discussions on that.
Well, that's good that we're aligned as an industry. So Jan, it's been a real pleasure, and again, a bit of an eye-opener. I think it's one of those topics, as we said at the beginning, that there was a lot of talk about. And I think what's come across to me as we've discussed this is it is difficult to move to these models. You can't do it overnight. And perhaps, the expectation in our industry was we're going to shift immediately, it'll all be wonderful. And because it's hard, it's kind of gone off the agenda. But it sounds like people are still doing this. Maybe it's just not as visible and not as high up the agenda as it was in the past.
Yeah, I confirm people are still doing it. That's the business of Blackwind. So we are at the heart of this transition every day. And yeah, a lot of companies are still going in this direction. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for sharing your insights. Thanks also for explaining the name Black Winch, because I'm sure you get asked that the whole time. And it's good. It's an unusual name, which is great. I think from a marketing point of view, people always say, what does Black Winch do? And why is it called Black Winch? So yeah. I think you've picked a very unique name in a world where often things just blend together. But thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure. And I'm sure we'll hear more about this going forward.
Thank you too.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Asset Finance Connect, sponsored by Alpha. I met Jan for the first time at the European Leaders Summit in Amsterdam, and was struck by his and Black Winch's continued commitment to the as-a-service model. What really stood out in our conversation today was that the transition to these models takes time, and that most companies are using them for portions of their operations rather than for their entire business. Perhaps one of the reasons why these models are being discussed less today is that our expectations around them were too high in the past. If you've enjoyed this podcast, look out for future episodes in the coming weeks, and feel free to suggest topics or ideas for future conversations. Thanks for listening.